come to, this clock says 1:30, because that's Apple time. There it is. Okay. So, everybody ready? Jim? Recorder? Okay, I want to welcome everybody to the Florida Building Commission's Energy Technical Advisory Committee meeting of January 24th, 2020. First, let's determine that we have a quorum, and then introduce those in the room, and then talk about teleconference process, and then we'll move from there. Commissioner Smith, Drew?
I'm here, present.
Very good. Commissioner Smith Burke, Kelly?
I'm here.
Very good. Commissioner Kaya, Oscar?
I'm here.
All right. Bob Cushell? All right. Jan Geislers?
Here.
Tim Grabowski? Jonathan Parks? Is that a yes, Jonathan? Jonathan, are you there? All right. Scott Rank?
Here.
Roger Sanders? David Wozniak? All right. We're one shy. All right. One more time. Bob Cushell? Tim Grabowski? Jonathan Parks? Roger Sanders? David Wozniak? So those 10 members are still all current, is that correct, Mo?
Two, three, four, five. Yeah, we need
one more. So we need one shy. We're one shy of a quorum.
Those guys that
Jim, this is Jan.
Okay, Jan.
It shows Tim Grabowski online.
Okay, is it possible that he's muted?
No, I just made sure everybody was.
Tim Grabowski, if you're there, we're not hearing you. Are you the here? Tim, if you're there, why don't you try connecting back in again? He may have just signed in and left for a minute. Who knows?
Let me send him a message.
All right. I'm looking for Bob Cushell, Tim Grabowski, Jonathan Parks, Roger Sanders, and David Wozniak. All right. Staff is going to try to contact, so we're just going to have to wait a minute and ascertain whether we can get one more person on. We're sending a message to Tim, too, Jan, just in case.
Yeah, I'm on. Connect by my phone.
Very good. So Tim is on. So we have six members. We have a quorum. I'll check one more time. Either Bob, Jonathan, Rogers, or David. All right. We have six of 10. We have a quorum. Let's introduce those here in the room in Tallahassee.
Chris Howell.
Justin Vogel.
Mohammed Ghani.
Marlita Peters.
Jim Hammers.
Jeff Blair. And we also have Tom Campbell and Norman Bellamy who are here as well. Okay.
Sorry, Jonathan Parks. I just called in. Sorry, I was a little late.
Okay, good. So we have seven. So I want to remind us of our teleconference participation process, which in essence is be aware of background noises. Please don't put your phone on hold, but put it on mute. Please introduce your name whenever you speak. And if you're and TAC members, when you make a motion or a second, please identify yourselves. Wait to speak until I'll call on everybody in turn. And I'll explain the process we'll be using when we get to it. Drew, do you want to approve the minutes and the agenda, or you want me just to kind of run through it?
You can go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right, thanks. All right, so we did the roll call. We did the opening. We introduced everybody, and we've talked about the process. So today's agenda is to approve the July 9th, 2019 meeting minutes, and then to provide comments to the Florida Building Commission or to provide recommendations to the Florida Building Commission on the comments on their draft of the Rule 61G21.001, which the Commission will then review and consider at the February 11th Rule Workshop. And then we're going to talk about the scope of work for the Energy Simulation Tool Approval Technical Assistance Manual called the TAM. And then we'll like to get review and acceptance of the Letter of Certification of Equivalence to the Department of Energy on the latest draft of the 7th edition Florida Building Code Energy Conservation that it's equivalent to ASHRAE 90.1/2016. And the commission will then take that up and approve it and send it on to DOE by the time certain date of February 27, 2020. That's the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
Geisler, so moved.
Second, Grabowski.
A motion, a second from Geisler and Grabowski. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All right, it's unanimous. Okay, are there any corrections or revisions to the posted July 9th, 2019 meeting minutes? If not, is there a motion to accept the minutes?
Frank, I'll make a
motion.
All right, we have a motion. Is there a second? Looking for a second, folks.
Can you turn off the television? Wojciech, second.
All right, we have a motion. So, David Wojciech, you're on the call now?
Yeah, I just got on. Thank you.
All right, so that makes us to 8, right?
Right.
All right, so all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Aye. So it's 8-0 on the minutes and 7-0 on the agenda. All right, so the next order of business is to go through and make recommendations on each of the submitted proposed amendments to the commission's draft of the 2020 building code. So the process is this. I will introduce each one in turn. I'll ask the proponent if they would like to speak on it. We're using 3-minute time limits, as we always have. Anybody else wish to speak in favor? Anybody in opposition? And then one collective opportunity for rebuttals, which will be timed at 2 minutes each. It's one collective, one for the proponent side, one for the opponent side, if we do have pros and cons, then back to the TAC. If there's a second, if a TAC member makes a motion, then we'll take the vote. If it achieves a two-thirds, 67% in favor, then it's an affirmative recommendation to the commission. We'll go on a consent agenda for approval. If it does not, it'll be NAR. If no motion is made, that will also be NAR. So if nobody's interested in the amendment, nobody needs to make a second. I'll say, does anybody wish to make a motion? If nobody says anything, I'll note that there's an NAR on that one. There's no affirmative recommendation, dies for lack of second, and we'll proceed to the next one in turn. That's the process. TAC members, do you have any questions on that? Okay, then we're going to get started, and we're going to start with... I got ahead of myself here.
Yeah,
go ahead, Mo.
This is Mo Madani. Good afternoon. And as Jeff said, mainly we'll be taking up the comments submitted on the draft Energy Code 2020. And as you see from the agenda, there is item number 4. You can click on the link, and that take you to a metrics. The metrics is titled Rural Development Workshop. It has all the comments received on the 2020 Florida Building Code. And as you see, the comments received, all listed as comments received, and also some attachments as reference from the comments received. For the energy tag, you just click on the comments received, and that has in it a document that is mainly compile all the changes or the proposed comment we received on the energy code draft. The comments are titled, as you see, with EN-ER-Chapter 4. That means these are comments received on the energy code, residential, ER the residential, and Chapter 4, and it's comment 1. I just really, you know, make sure you understand that, as was noted and also explained in the memo I sent out, is this is really to gather comments on the supplement that we put together to the 2017 Florida Building Code Energy Conservation. The supplement has been posted on our system since last September, along with the foundation code, the 2017 Florida Building Code Energy Conservation. So comments are, you know, these comments submitted to the draft. Just to let you know that normally with the comments, we look for really, you know, those comments that resolve a conflict or a glitch or point out missing information and or a, or missing text and so on. So that's really what we're looking for. As you know, we are at the tail end of the process, and a lot of work has been done. This is a more than, it's almost a 3 years endeavor. We are in the tail end of the third year. So if any question about the comments or about the documents, if not, go ahead, Jeff.
All right. Okay, we're going to start with ENER Chapter 4, comment number 1, submitted by Jeff Sunny. Jeff, would you like to speak on this?
Yeah, very briefly, yes, this is Jeff Sunny. Just to note, as a review of this, Mod 7597, Mod A3 was approved, and we would like to have A4 reconsidered, which is basically the same as A3, just changes the references to the ANSI standard here from 2014 to 2019 version of standard 301, and then related items to that. The rationale being this will bring up the Florida code up to the latest standard and also allows addendum A to 2019 to be referenced as well, which better defines current appliance characteristics.
All right. Anybody else in the public wish to speak in favor? Anybody in opposition?
Joe Belcher.
All right, Joe. Go ahead.
We're not really in opposition to Joe Belcher for Florida Homeowners Association. Sorry about that. We're not really in opposition to updating the standard, but we do have a concern that the standard is moving toward commercial buildings, which would get into more than three stories for residential and up into high rise. We have a member that expressed concern based on the fact that the high-rise buildings these days, I was not aware of this, are providing what they call amenity floors or amenity areas, and they have a guest suite, which is like a bedroom and a bathroom without a kitchen, for the purpose of if a building resident has company and they don't have enough space, they can lease or rent that space for while their company's there. Basically, those guest suite areas are treated like a hotel room, just a bedroom and a bath. They'll have, you know, the same kind of air conditioning. It's not a system. It's just for that particular area. So we would like to know, and I know I sent something to Mo and to Drew, and I sent it to Rob as well. I know that this is a late in the game to try to change anything, and you don't typically want tax making mods while they're. But I'd like to get the feeling from the TAC, see if I should maybe submit this for the April workshop or if maybe they want to consider it today. Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead. This is Arlene Stewart. I have the same concern when it comes to high-rise. You know, one of my clients, other clients is in New York, and we had this kind of issue with NYSERDA when it came to high-rise residential, and we had a lot of trouble mixing impact and when it came to high-rise residential requirements, and it was a real headache. And I think this is not ready for prime time, especially to come in as a standard. And previously at the I-codes, especially when it came to windows, there was a lot of activity in previous years back and forth about how different requirements didn't fit. And this I think this really needed to be looked at more in depth in conjunction with the building tax. So I really have concerns about how this would roll out, especially over 200 feet. So to come in as a standard change without having the other tack look at what some unintended consequences, there's a reason that residential is in the commercial code as opposed to the residential code. Thank you.
All right. Anybody else wish to speak, I guess, sort of in opposition to this?
Yes, Joe Belcher here. Can I just add one comment? I forgot to mention the first go-around.
Go ahead.
Joe Belcher, Florida Home Builders Association. And I just want to say we understand that when you look at the code, the commercial code, it doesn't really reference 301. We just tend to feel that this is moving to that direction, and we want to try to address it early on so we don't wind up with a problem in the future. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Sonny, Jeff Sonny, would you like to have a rebuttal opportunity?
I think I'll basically stand on the rationale here, and just that this is, you know, intended for it. It will be in the residential section.
Okay. All right, going to the TAC members. TAC members, you heard the discussion. So if anybody wants to make a motion, or if no one does, we'll move on. Does any TAC member wish to move to approve this modification at this time? All right, we're going to call it NAR and move on to the next one. The next one is ENRERD, also submitted, comment number one, also submitted by Jeff Sunny. Jeff?
Yeah, this is the duct leakage test report. We just had a couple of more typo items here. And basically the most significant one was in the listing of duct leakage test results. We had system 1, 2, 3, and we had a sum of any, and there was a word missing there, and said to use the word others there so we could add additional systems if there was more than three systems in a project. So we're just trying to clarify the form.
All right. Anybody from public wish to speak in favor? Anybody in opposition? TAC members, is there a motion?
Geisler, yes.
We have Geisler on the first. Who made the second?
Oscar makes the second.
We have Commissioner Kaya. Any discussion?
All in yes, favor? Jeff. This is Drew.
Sure, Drew. Go ahead.
Excuse me, Jeff.
Yes, sir.
The section of prescriptive method is a little overwritten there, as far as the way it's laid out right now. I think there's some typo or some graphics that, at least the one that I'm looking at, it's all kind of smushed. The line that says is the air handler unit installed during testing, and the check boxes and all are kind of all overwritten over some other text.
I think this has to do with really the VDF and when it's transferred, but ultimately it will be cleaned as a format wise. You know, it'll be kind of different in the.
So Drew, how about we approve it with the understanding that those will be cleaned?
That's fine. Yes.
All right. Let's make that to the motion. The motion is to accept the recommend approval of this with the cleaning of the superimposed text. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It's yes. Has any attack members joined the calls other than the eight that we have? All right. So the vote is 8-0, unanimous, clean version. Very good. Let's move on to our next one, which is Chapter 4, ENCE Chapter 4, comment number one, submitted by Leo Smith. Is there a Leo Smith or somebody representing Leo Smith on the call? All right. Does anybody wish to speak either in favor of it or anybody wish to speak in opposition of it?
Yes, good afternoon. This is Brian Hall with NEM. I'd like to speak in opposition, please.
Please, Brian, go ahead.
Okay, Brian Hall with NEMA Codes and Standards, speaking in opposition. Very briefly, one is procedural, that this is all completely new information that hasn't previously been included during any of the previous phases of the code development process, which concerns me. As far as I can tell, Every other comment that was made is based on the draft or previously discussed iCode changes or code modifications that were submitted in DCIS. So I'm not sure procedurally this is an acceptable comment. But since we're talking about it, there are two very serious technical flaws to this proposal. And the first is that 2,600 lumens is not a metric for energy efficacy or conservation whatsoever. And the example that I would use is you could use an incandescent lamp that is much below 2,600 to avoid this rule, but has a really low efficacy, like in the area of 10 lumens per watt, which would be an efficacy standard that you could raise, where an LED, for example, might illuminate over 2,600 lumens, but be in the area of 90 lumens per watt. So in short, you could put this rule into effect and increase the lighting energy that's used in a building, and I don't think that's the intent of the section or the code itself. So lumens themselves are not a good metric. There are many other characteristics of lighting that's associated with efficiency and proper use. Lumens aren't them. And the second is the idea of full cutoff or fully shielded. While the proponent gives a definition, there is nothing defined in any standard for how that would work, either in specification, product safety standard, or installation instructions. And what I mean by that is you would have no way of knowing how to determine that horizontal sight line for where the light emits. It won't be included in the nameplate. There's no standard for it. So like other things like IC rating, wet location, submersible, hazardous location, those would be included in installation instructions and marking. There is not going to be that. So I don't know how anybody's going to be able to determine what that shielding is providing. You won't be able to get it from the manufacturer. You wouldn't know until it was installed. By the way, there is no measurement devices for that.
You got about 30 seconds, Brian.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yep.
Yeah, so again, my concern with that is people would buy them, install them, find out that they didn't comply, and then they would do field modifications that could be dangerous and result in fire, shock, electrocution. So asking you to please recommend for disapproval. I'll work with the proponent to come back maybe next cycle and come up with something that would work for Florida. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Anybody else wish to speak in opposition?
Joe Belcher, FHBA, hold on to your chairs. We're agreeing with Brian. There are no costs whatsoever given for what it would cost to provide these shields, and that's one of the requirements we have for considering code changes is the cost impact. Thank you.
All right. Anybody else? All right. Well, there's no need for rebuttal since nobody spoke in favor, so let's come back to our TAC. Does any TAC member wish to make a motion to approve this new code change? All right. No affirmative recommendation. All right, let's move on to our next one, which is ENECE Chapter 4, Comment Number 2. Who was that submitted by, Mo?
This is submitted by Brian.
So, Brian, this is yours. Go ahead.
All right, Brian Holland, in the Codes and Standards. So I'm bringing this again to your attention that what we're doing here is we're reverting the code back to a previous state. So significantly reducing the energy conservation that can be derived from the option to select the ASHRAE path in lieu of the Florida Building Code prescriptive or performance path. One of my big concerns, as you'll see in my reasons for comment of the recommended change, is that the proponent only gave basically a paragraph of hearsay that apparently some contractors had some trouble meeting this requirement, but provided no data, no case studies, nothing to indicate that this was actually not reducing energy or that there was some problems in the field. In fact, though, I provided several documentations, including six national studies, and these were significant studies that were done by third parties, case initiative study, GSA, the University of Idaho, the DOE Better Buildings Program, ACEEE, all these have shown a significant reduction that automatic receptacle can bring in. And I would mention that I tied this comment number two to comment number 4, number 7, and 8 as options for the TAC to reconsider this whole section around power efficiency that's in our Florida Energy Code. So this is the first of 4 that's trying to achieve national what the national consensus is surrounding automatic receptacle control and power inside a building. But in, we need to really get rid of this requirement as it's isolating only to ASHRAE and not addressing the larger issue that's the national standard. Thank you.
All right. Does anybody else wish to speak in support of the comment? Does anybody wish to speak in opposition?
Joe Belcher, FHVA.
Go ahead, Joe.
Thank you, Brian. As you all heard Brian say, he submitted all these, everything he submitted has been submitted previously. The TAC has turned this change down, the striking of this section down 3 times, and they've actually approved adding this language, section 842, 3 times. It's been approved, I think, may have gone through the commission once, I'm not positive, I don't want to make any statements there. Basically, this is automatic receptacle control. The electricians, the electrical contractors were the ones, and other contractors were the ones that said that people are not using this. What they're winding up doing is overloading other circuits with the extension cords and things, so they don't have to worry about things shutting off automatically after they leave. I don't want to belabor the point. You've approved it a number of times already, and I think that you should request that you continue to support it and turn this change down.
All right. Anybody else wish to speak in opposition? All right. Brian, would you like a rebuttal?
I just want to remind you guys that this was a DEC statement that said this section was a mandatory requirement regardless of the path, compliance path that is chosen. However, this amendment would only impact when somebody chooses the ASHRAE path, which is a national energy standard where automatic receptacle control has been in place since the 2010 edition. I'll just also mention that for the 2021, our next edition that will be the base of the 8th edition, is putting this into C405.10. So again, it's going to be a part of the national model code that we're going to use as the basis for Florida. So this is really going to be putting Florida backwards, where right now we're actually ahead of the national consensus. And I think we should stay that way for the sake of energy efficiency. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Belcher, would you like a rebuttal?
Please, not to rebut. I just want to remind the TAC that the Florida Building Code, all volumes are the base code in Florida. Now, we are not, just because they adopt it someplace else doesn't mean we have to adopt it. Thank you.
All right. That concludes public comment. I'm going back to the TAC. Does any TAC member wish to make a motion in support of this amendment? All right. That's a no affirmative recommendation. We're moving on to ENCE Chapter 4, Comment Number 3, also submitted by Brian Holland. Brian?
All right. So this is similar to the last one, and I'll affirm what Joe just said. You guys did already see this. You did turn it down. It did go in front of the commission. I didn't bring it to the commission because I didn't get TAC support. However, the reason why I decided to bring it back for the February commission meeting was during the December hearings, several of the commission members indicated a not necessarily regret, but concern that they missed many of the I-code changes during that first phase of the process, and some of those didn't get reinserted during the proposed modification stage. That's the case with this one, C403424, which significantly improves the efficacy of part load controls for HVAC systems. Essentially, it's not adding any new requirements. It's just changing thresholds. So it's not adding new requirements that are not already recognized by the industry and already industry accepted. It just changes the threshold from 500,000 BTUs down to 300,000 and also changes motor capacities from 10 horsepower down to 2. I provided, a case study that was provided to ASHRAE that showed what the savings can be for this and how using variable flow control is so much more energy efficient than static systems that are full on, full off. So, again, this is current day technology that's widely available. The cost payback is immense, and I'm asking you to reconsider this one because, again, this is going to be keeping Florida way behind the national standard if we don't accept this now. Thank you.
All right, Brian. Anybody else wish to speak in favor? Anybody in opposition?
This is Jonathan Parks. I speak in favor of this.
Hey, wait one second, Jonathan. Jonathan, wait till we're going to do public comment first. When we come back to the TAC, then you can.
Sorry, I missed that.
That's okay. All right. Does anybody from the public wish to speak in opposition to it?
Joe Melcher, Florida Homebuilders Association.
Yes, Joe, go ahead.
Again, as Brian said, you've turned it down previously. He said there's no technical changes. All that's changed are the thresholds that trigger the requirements, and that is the big issue. He's lowering that threshold considerably, so a lot more systems would have to follow these requirements. He doesn't give any cost as to what it costs to do the system, and I'm not familiar enough that I can give you a cost, but I can tell you that when my pool pump requirement went from a regular pump to a variable flow pump, the price of my pool pump to replace it went from $125 to it's $1,200. So I'm imagining there's going to be a lot of cost involved here. I have not made a study to figure that out, and Brian does not really address the cost. He does talk about some savings, but I would recommend that you just NAR this one as you have in the past.
All right. Anybody else wish to speak in opposition? All right. Brian, would you like a rebuttal?
I would just say, again, this is Brian Nima, Coastal Standards, that the initial cost is certainly is super important, but if the payback is swift and then also starts to reduce energy cost, then that initial cost of this is kind of null and void. It doesn't really matter if the payback is short and the efficacy of the system starts paying back the owner. So this is all about the consumer benefiting from, yes, increased initial cost, but long-term benefits over the life of these systems. And these systems are intended to operate the life of the building.
All right. Mr. Belcher, would you like a rebuttal?
Again, there's nothing in here that tells me what those initial costs are, so I'd have to oppose anything because I don't know what the cost is at all. I mean, there might be a lot of money coming back, but it may be that it's not as quickly as payback, and I have no way to determine that based on what's been submitted.
Okay, that concludes public comment. We'll come back to the TAC. Does any TAC member wish to make a motion?
This is Jonathan Parks. I make a motion to approve this. I think our codes need to be forward-reaching and aspirational, and I think it's important that we get ahead of this.
All right. Is there a second? All right. Motion dies for lack of second. No affirmative recommendation. All right. Let's move on to the next one, which is ENECE Chapter 4, Comment Number 4, also submitted by Brian Holland. Brian?
All right, Brian Holland, NEMA Codes and Standards. So this is tied into that last one we just talked about, the automatic receptacle control exemption for ASHRAE. This relates directly to the section that points you to ASHRAE Section 8 that's included in a DEC statement. And I just wanted to make sure that you guys realize that this is, again, not changing anything. It's not adding this in as a new requirement. It's simply drawing over a DEC statement that exists for this section, just never got incorporated into the code properly, as we've done with several. So several proposed modifications this cycle were specifically based on incorporating DEC statements into the code for clarity and usability. If you read DEC statement 2016-033, this is the question. Does the Florida Building Code, Energy Conservation, section 3457.1, require conformance with the requirements of ASHRAE 90.1 8.4.2 automatic corrosion control? The answer, yes. Pursuant to section C40571 Florida Building Code, power distribution systems in buildings and questions are subject to ASHRAE 90.1, including the mandatory provisions of section 8.4 of said standard. So all this is doing is it's getting rid of that vague term, design condition, that nobody knows what that means, and bringing in the specific yes answer of this spec statement. This is simply adding clarity to the code, so I stopped getting phone calls every other week on what does this section mean and what parts of ASHRAE do I have to comply with, which ones do I not when the prescriptive or performance paths are selected in the Florida Building Code. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Brian. Does anybody else wish to speak in favor of the comment? All right, anybody from the public wish to speak in opposition?
Joe Belcher, FHBA. Again, this is going around the other change that prohibits the adoption of that section that deals with automatic receptacle control. Design conditions is actually, there is a definition in ASHRAE 90.1. I don't have it off the top of my head, but I did look it up, and there is a definition there. This change basically would put the automatic receptacle control back in. If there's a conflict with the DEC statement, the previous change would eliminate that, because now it says you don't have to, you can't. No, it doesn't say you don't have to. It says it prohibits adoption. And that's a change that's been approved now by you on the fourth go-around. So I would request that you NAR this change as well.
All right. Anybody else wish to speak in opposition?
Hi, Brett. This is Diane.
Hey, Diane. How are you?
Okay, someone needs to get up. Can we mute them?
Excuse me, folks. Can everyone mute their phones if they're not talking?
Yeah. Hey, folks. There, we got them shut off from our end. Okay, Brian, do you wish to rebut?
Yes, very briefly. Nothing could be further from the truth of what Joe just said. The amendment that you guys just approved only applies to C401. .2 option 1, which is a direct pointer to ASHRAE. So if somebody comes to the Florida Building Code Energy, says, I don't really want to use this book, I'm just going to go to ASHRAE, and they select that path, they're going to get an exception from automatic receptacle control based on your approval. However, option number 2 and option number 3 point you to C405, and specifically 405.6.1, and this is where this rule kicks in. So it has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with Joe's proposal to remove ARC out of ASHRAE. It still is going to be a requirement if you use the Florida Energy Code for compliance, and this just makes sure people understand what it applies to. Thank you.
All right. Does Mr. Belcher, would you like a rebuttal?
No, I'll just stand on what we said before. ASHRAE is the only one that actually requires automatic receptacle control. So, and I do object to having my testimony described as untruthful. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, and we should refrain from that. I almost made a comment, but I didn't. So, let's remember that we're speaking to the issues and not to each other as individuals. Okay. Going to the TAC. You heard public comment. You heard from the proponent. Does any TAC member wish to make a motion? All right, no affirmative recommendation. Our next one is ENECE, Chapter 4, Comment Numbers 5, also submitted by Brian Holland. Brian.
All right, so this is addressing voltage drop, which has for a long time been a Florida-specific amendment and included the language that I'm proposing to include in there, which is customer-owned service conductors. That's really the only change that's taking place. When we inserted voltage drop into the Florida Building Code all the way up until the fourth edition, it's been required. And by the way, this is also a requirement in Section 8 of ASHRAE. So again, it makes sense to bring this over into the Florida Building Code as a requirement. So we have voltage drop, but it's missing out on that first set of conductors that are part of the premise wiring system that's always been in the Florida Building Code. However, when we moved to the 5th edition and 6th edition, most of the time, all the Florida-specific amendments would be carried over. But in this case, when we changed the designation to 5% from the split 2% and 3%, we missed picking up the Florida-specific language. So essentially what we did is we grabbed the ASHRAE language, inserted it into the section as written, and forgot to pick up the Florida-specific rule that included customer-owned service conductors. So, again, all I'm trying to do here is restore the voltage drop requirement that we've always had in Florida and then modify to make the 5% rule equivalent to ASHRAE, but missed and dropped the service conductors. So again, this is the low-hanging fruit. And again, I'll mention that this is exactly what the language will look like in the 2021 IECC, and it will be a part of the addendum to the 2019 ASHRAE document that's published now. So again, this keeps Florida in league with the national standard. Thank you.
All right. Anybody else wish to speak in support from the public? Anybody wish to speak in opposition?
Joe Belcher, Florida Home Builders Association. Yep. I believe we also discussed this one previously, and there was a, I don't remember the total argument, but the electrical contractor let us know that adding customer-owned in there would greatly expand the application of this requirement. And since it's been turned down previously, we would request that you NAR this one as well. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Bell, anybody else wish to speak in opposition?
David Wojcicki.
David, can you let's wait till we come back to the TAC.
Sorry about that. Got out of turn.
It's okay. No problem. Mr. Holland, do you want a rebuttal opportunity?
No, thank you.
All right. Okay, we'll come back to the TAC. Does any TAC member wish to make a motion?
The only comment I've got about this, and again, I have opposition to this, the 5% voltage drop rule altogether anyway, but customer-owned services, in some cases, the customer-owned service will go from the meter to the transformer or to the service point for FP&L, and in other cases, FP&L or the local utility will own that feeder. So basically, you've got to decide who owns what. And I understand the rationale behind what they're talking about, but in a lot of cases, again, that feeder that we're talking about, or the service entrance conductors they're talking about, could be owned by the person, or it could be owned by the local utility. So customer owned could be different for the different cases.
Okay. So does anybody wish to make a motion then in support? All right. So I'm going to say no affirmative recommendation. NAR from the Energy TAC. Let us move on to the next one, which is ENECE Chapter 4, Comment Number 6, also submitted by Brian Holland. Brian?
All right, Brian Holland, NEMA Codes and Standards. So this was an alternative language comment to a proposal that was submitted by John Hall of Miami-Dade County that currently has a zoning ordinance that implements EV-ready requirements down in Southeast Florida, based on a national model program for EV Ready. It didn't pass muster. You guys decided that we didn't want to do this. However, the two reasons that I'm bringing it back to your attention is, one, the exact language that you see on your screen will be in the 2021 IECC. It's going to apply to both commercial and residential. I didn't go to the residential provision, but I just wanted to keep this in commercial. So, again, we're not going to be quite at the national level, but we'll certainly be close having it on the commercial side where I feel that it'll have most benefit. The second reason I decided to bring it back is there's currently, right now, for the 2020 legislative cycle, 6 bills submitted into the Senate related to EV-ready or EV infrastructure requirements. And there's 5 corresponding House bills associated with EV-ready infrastructure that's going to essentially require the DOT, the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Affairs, and possibly even the DBPR through the Affordability Commission, to create mandatory standards for EV-ready and EV-capable infrastructure at commercial parking spaces. So what this is an attempt to do is to preempt a legislative mandate through statutory changes and put in through this regulatory process good code that's now been vetted at the national level and is being adopted all over the place through model ordinances, so we have a uniform standard here in Florida for EV vehicles as it will be in the national standard. So please reconsider. Again, this is an opportunity for Florida to stay ahead of the curve when it comes to renewable energies and things like electric vehicles.
Thank you.
Hey, Brian. It's Tom Campbell. Are those bills, are those federal bills or state bills? The ones you
These are state bills.
You think they're state bills?
If you look at Senate Bill 452, House Bill 943, that's electric vehicle charging station, Senate 728, House Bill 1239, Senate 1230, 1220. I'm happy to share those with you.
But these
are large-scale infrastructure. And the other one I'll mention is the Energy 2040 Task Force, which is basically indicating that they want all federal and state buildings to be operating on electric vehicles by 2040. So we're going to need to have charging in place. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else wish to speak in support of the amendment? All right. Anybody wish to speak in opposition to it?
Joe Belcher, Florida Home Builders Association.
Go ahead.
And I'd be happy to go second if somebody else wanted to speak against it.
This was Rob Vieira. I was a little slow, but I'd like to speak in favor of the language. Definitions are needed someplace.
All right, go ahead. If you're speaking in favor, then go ahead. Rob.
I'm just speaking in favor, so I think it's important to get it in the code. Thank you.
Okay. All right, anybody else in favor? Anybody in opposition? Joe?
Joe Belcher, Florida Home Builders Association. Again, this is one that you've seen before and turned down. If a building owner wants to provide EV charging stations, that's their prerogative. They can do that now. Why do we have to keep telling people what they have to do with their property? This is not a building code issue. This is, you know, if somebody says that, well, Ford said that by 2016 they're going to be doing all, or 2029 they're going to be doing all electric. We can't base code requirements on what auto manufacturers are doing. Okay, so if somebody wants to have electric vehicle charging in their building, they can have it. We should not be telling them they have to have it. We request that, and again, there's no cost given here, and we would request that you NAR this as well.
All right, anybody else in opposition? All right, Brian, do you want to speak, do you want a rebuttal opportunity?
No, I'm good, thank you.
All right, we'll come back to the TAC. Does any TAC member wish to make a motion in support of this?
I would. This is Kelly Smith Burke.
All right, we have a motion. Is there a second? All right, motion dies for lack of second. No affirmative recommendation. Okay, let's move on to our next one, which is ENECE Chapter 4, Comment Number 7. Mr. Holland, Brian.
Okay, so Brian Holland, NEMA Codes and Standards. This is a tie-in to Joe's, comment number 2, and it also ties into comment number 4. The problem that I see here, as I indicated, I don't like the language that's in C405.6.1, and I'm the guy that has to give electrical education all over the state and try to explain what these rules are, and then have to tie in another document, the ASHRAE document, to show what this Section 8 stuff has. So since you guys aren't interested in fixing C405.6.1, my thought was, it's bizarre that there's essentially three requirements in Section 8. There's voltage drop, energy monitoring, and automatic recycling control.
I'm sorry, Brian. I don't mean to interrupt you. Are we talking about comment number 7?
Yes.
Energy monitoring mandatory?
Yes.
Yes, please. Thank you.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Brian.
What's happening... So right now, C405.6.1 says you go to Section 8 of ASHRAE and you have to follow those mandatory rules for power. Instead of listing those same rules into the Florida Building Code Energy, it points you to ASHRAE. For whatever reason, we decided to put voltage drop, which is one of those provisions in ASHRAE, into the Florida Building Code Energy, but we didn't bring over those other provisions. This is one of them. So energy monitoring, this is the language that's in Section 8 of ASHRAE that is a pointer in C405.6.1 when you use the three options in C401.2. So basically what it does is it says, hey, instead of having to go look at that other book for what that design conditions of ASHRAE section means, here's what it is. It's voltage drop, it's energy monitoring, and we'll get to the next one on automatic receptacle control. So this is simply bringing in the already mandatory provisions that's in the Florida Energy Code, and just putting that language in the Energy Code instead of having a reference pointer to it.
All right. Anybody else wish to speak in support?
This is Arlene Stewart, and I'd just like to point out that Doug Harvey and I are also teaching this, and we're not having nearly the trouble that he is, in spite of the fact that we've asked for his help before. Thank you very much.
All right. Anybody else wish to speak in favor? Anybody wish to speak in opposition?
Joe Belcher, Florida Homeowners Association. I wasn't quite sure if Arlene was in favor or against or just making a general statement, though. But thank you for that information, Arlene.
Well,
again,
Okay, wait. Joe Belcher's up now.
Personal. There's a lot of personal stuff going on.
Right, so let's leave that out. Mr. Belcher, it's your turn to comment.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that.
No, you should.
Yeah, never leave an opening. Energy monitoring has got to be an expensive system. You want to measure every piece of energy you use, et cetera, et cetera. No cost estimates of any kind that I can see are given in this, and no cost estimates in the reason. And I don't see where we're going to get any return. I don't see that monitoring energy is going to save energy. So we're already requiring commissioning and inspection and a lot of other things. So I think this is just one step over the line too far. And request an NAR.
Okay. Anybody else wish to speak in opposition?
David Wojcik.
Okay. David,
the only thing I want to have is that we actually look at the energy consumption of buildings because we want to look at the maximum kW demand of the building, and we can get that from Florida Power and Light with their new smart meters. I mean, I understand this goes into quite a bit more detail, but the whole thing is how much energy is a building consuming as opposed to, we're looking at this thing and we're starting to sectionalize all of it, and we want to know where every little bit of piece of energy comes from, and that is not an inexpensive option to do.
All right. So, Mr. Belcher, Mr. Holland, would you like your rebuttal opportunity before we go back to the TAC?
Sure. The comments that have been made are a perfect example of the confusion that's in the industry that I mentioned. Two comments saying, we can't add this requirement to the code. It's too expensive. It's already there. The C40561 pointer that says you have to comply with Section 8 of ASHRAE when you use any of the compliance paths of the Energy Conservation Code points you to this section. Energy monitoring is in that section. This has been a rule since 2016 in the state of Florida. So when you read all those rules, it should be being done now, today. Every single building under the sixth edition of the Florida Building Code Energy had to put energy monitor in with these thresholds because of the C405.6 provision. So if anybody here is saying this is new, they clearly didn't understand what C405.6 and the deck statement did with the code, and they're not complying with the Florida Energy Code. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Belcher, would you like a rebuttal opportunity?
Please. C405.6.1 does not say you have to do that. It says that it applies to all building power distribution systems. The provisions for electrical distribution for all sectors of this code are subject to the design conditions in ASHRAE 90.1. Design conditions are defined by ASHRAE 90.1. It's not telling you have to provide energy monitoring. That could be somebody's interpretation, and that's why we don't really want to specifically say in the code that you have to do it. Thank you.
Okay, so that concludes public comment on this one. We're going back to the TAC. Does any TAC member wish to make a motion in support of the comment? All right, no affirmative recommendation on comment number 7. We go to comment number 8, which is ENECE Chapter 4, comment number 8, also submitted by Brian. Brian?
This is exactly the same as number 7. The other provision that's in Section 8 of the mandatory requirements of C40561 is the automatic receptacle control. It's the second part of the three requirements in that part. So again, instead of pointing people to ASHRAE to understand what ARC is, it brings it right into the energy code. Again, we'll mention that energy monitoring and automatic receptacle control will be in the 2021 IECC. This is not doing this stuff or trying to delete it. is putting Florida backwards with energy conservation. And that, I believe, is violating statute, and it's not good for our citizens. So please support and reconsider this for the commission meeting on the 11th. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else wish to speak in favor of the amendment? All right. Anybody in opposition?
Joe Belcher, Florida Homebuilders Association. I'm not going to reiterate all that we've said. This, again, automatic receptacle controls are not required, and this would do that. So please, NAR this one.
All right, Brian, would you want a rebuttal?
By the way, let me add one final comment.
Yep.
We every edition, we evaluate our code against the national code for equivalency. We've never come out to be not equivalent. So, I mean, I don't understand this, where we're getting behind the national code. We have other things the national code does not allow or require, and that keeps us where we need to be. Thank you.
All right. Anybody else in opposition? Mr. Holland, do you wish a rebuttal opportunity?
No, thank you.
All right, we go back to the TAC. Does any TAC member wish to make a motion in support? All right.
David Wojcik. The only comment I can make is that from a lighting standpoint, we have never had any trouble meeting the lighting density requirements, even as they get smaller and smaller. That would be my only comment.
All right. So does any TAC member wish to make a motion in support? Then we'll give it an NAR, no affirmative recommendation. All right. We move on to next is ENCE Chapter 4, Comment Number 9, submitted by Brian Holland. Brian?
All right. So this one's a little different. What happened was during the first phase, very few of the ICO changes got accepted, as we all know, which required a bunch of BCIS proposed modifications to be submitted, which I was a proponent of all of them. And what I did is I essentially just brought over everything that's in C405 in the 2018 IECC to make sure that the 7th edition Florida Building Code Energy Conservation matches. I neglected unintentionally to look forward to C406 at the optional requirements for compliance. And the only section there that had a change that's impacted by the stuff that you guys already approved is C406.3. So this, again, it's not changing anything. It's not adding any new requirements. It's clarifying the right pointer. You'll see the sections that are deleted and added only match the language that you guys already approved in C405.4.1. In C405.2, which we heavily modified. So this, again, just clarifies and corrects what that language says in 405. So if somebody decides to use this option, the 406.3 option, the language is correct. So that's all that this is doing. So this is purely editorial, and it was simply missed under 7325 that we fixed all those changes in 405.4.1. I noted in my comments. Thank you.
All right, anybody else wish to speak in support? All right, anybody in opposition?
Joe Belcher, Florida Homebuilders Association. We're not major opposition, but some of the things that he's doing here seem to be a little bit more than clarification. Looks like he's deleting the space-by-space method. He's taking out the 90% of interior lighting, so I guess you're going to have to use the total lighting all the time, and I'm not really sure that's what we want to do. I would ask the energy tech to look closely at this.
All right. Anybody else wish to speak in opposition? All right. Brian, do you want to have a rebuttal?
Yeah. So the 90% is still there. This is just a rewriting of the section to match what you guys already did. C405.4.1 and C405.4.2, this is all interior power lighting. So what's required as far as the calculation, the total calculation, and then what the allowances are, that all changed. It will be all new. There is no space-by-space method anymore. You guys got rid of it. So what I ask you to do is go look at the draft of what C4541 and 4052, and then try to imagine you're doing reduced lighter power densities to those densities that are required. So you're going to do all your math, and you're going to determine what the total lighting density you're allowed to have for an occupancy. If you choose this as an option, you have to cut another 10% off of that. That's not changing. It's exactly what this rule says. It's just rewritten with the language to match what you guys already approved earlier in the cycle, the development cycle. So there's no bait and switch or games with this. This is literally just a cleanup. It was a miss on my part.
All right. Mr. Belcher, do you want to rebut or whatever?
No, I'm fine.
All right. Coming back to the TAC, does anybody wish to make a motion in support? All right. Then no affirmative recommendation. All right, we're going to move on to comment ENCE Chapter 4. What? Okay, ENCE Chapter 4, comment number 10, submitted by Amanda Hickman. Amanda, are you on?
I am. Good afternoon. Amanda Hickman with the Hickman Group, speaking on behalf of AHRI on this comment. You may remember that I brought this in previously in our cycle, and it was to address this issue with walk-in coolers and freezers and display cases that are currently in the Florida language in conflict with the preempted federal requirements for walk-in coolers and freezers. Of course, this conflict came from the 2015 IECC, and what happened was whoever put this in there originally kind of took out all kinds of language from the DOE regulations and kind of stuck them in here and didn't exactly get them right, wrong test standards, it's kind of a mishmash and incorrect things and now out-of-date things, and so it was causing a real issue, which is why when I brought forward mods 8137 and 8139, I think this TAC and also the commission unanimously approved them. At that time, when I originally brought it to you, I kind of indicated that we were trying to get this fixed at the ICC because the problem still had existed there. And last year, of course, was their update for the IECC for the 2021 edition, but we were trying to get with all the stakeholders involved to come up with a good fix for this. So what I submitted to Florida was kind of a general fix, kind of a best guess, which is definitely resolves the issue, but it's not the complete fix. And I had respectfully requested that you allowed me to go into the ICODE process and work with the stakeholders there, because it is impacting manufacturers on the AHRI side, on the insulation side, enforcement, designers, everywhere. And everyone is kind of trying to figure out how you test these things with all these incorrect kind of cells in these tables, and it's very cumbersome and kind of overcomplicated. So this is the fix. All the stakeholders came together. We got three proposals unanimously approved through the process that will be in the 2021, and this is the combination of that fix, which actually is a cleaner, more straightforward, and I know it's like it because we're striking out all this old language with tables.
Hey, Amanda, you have 30 seconds.
Okay, thanks. We've consolidated this table into one. We've gotten rid of this kind of piecemeal prescriptive language and put nice, clean, charging language. And so I know it's kind of a little wonky with the strike-throughs and underlines, but I'm hoping that you'll see at the end this is, you know, it's a combination of these three proposals that were approved by the process by all the stakeholders involved, and this is the complete fix. So I would ask that you would approve this language to override your previously, I think, unanimous decision with the kind of halfway fix that you approved before.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
All right, anybody else wish to speak in support? All right, does anybody wish to speak in opposition? All right, there's no opposition. We come back to the TAC. Does any TAC member wish to make a motion in support?
This is Drew. I'll make a motion in support.
All right. Is there a second?
This is Ryan. Jonathan Parks, a second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Then all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Is there any opposed? The motion passes unanimously.
Nice work, Amanda. That's a lot of work that went into this one.
Appreciate it, and thanks for sticking with me on this one. I know it's got a little kind of cumbersome there.
Okay, we move on.
Jeff, are you able to hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay.
All right, ENCE Chapter 4, comment number 11. There's also an attachment submitted by Joe Belcher. Joe?
I found myself muted. Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. this change would basically try to clear up what we do for commissioning on commercial buildings, especially including tenant spaces where you have the shell construction and then they come back with the tenant space. We do provide costs. We did provide data on the costs, and we're looking at like 0.8% of construction costs, or approximately $1 a square foot. This provision would strictly apply to fairly large buildings. Chapter Section 408 limits those to where the cooling capacity is less than 480,000 cooling and 600,000 BTU combined service water heating. They would be exempt. So we're talking about large buildings, and we would request that you approve this.
All right. Anybody else wish to speak in favor? Anybody wish to speak in opposition? All right. There's no opposition. We come back to the TAC. Does any TAC member wish to make a motion in support of this?
Geisler.
All right. We have Jan Geisler on the motion and Commissioner Smith on the second. Any discussion? All right. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? It's unanimous on an 8-0 in support. All right, we move on to ENCE Chapter 5, comment number 1, submitted by Brian Holland. Brian?
Okay, Brian Holland, NEMA Code and Standards. We have to go all the way back to the 2015 IECC code development process, when the exception number 7 was replaced in 503.1 with a new section C503.6. Unfortunately, by a glitch, an error, an errata, the exception number 7 was not removed out of the 2015 IECC, even though it had a conflict with the new approved language by the committee and by the public for C503.6.1. So unfortunately, when we now are bringing in the 2015 language, again, we missed it. And now we have in our sixth edition, exception number 7, which is in direct conflict with C503.6, which was intended to replace that. In my mind, this is errata. It needed to be removed. It was corrected in the 2018, and now I'm trying to correct it here. C503.6 contains all the requirements for alterations for lighting and provides the exception that was already in number 7 with a change threshold. So all I'm trying to do here is correct the code, again, not changing any of the requirements because we already have C503.6. It's deleting a section that was intended to never be there. It's errata, so this is just a quick and easy fix.
All right. Anybody else wish to speak in favor? Anybody in opposition?
Joe Belcher, FHVA.
Go ahead.
The item in Section 7 is talking about alterations that replace 50% of the luminaires in a space. Okay? That's replacing luminaires. The item in C5036, lighting systems, is where you have new lighting systems that are part of an alteration. So that's not just a replacement, that's adding new. So the exception, which one is Brian trying to, the exception that talks about 50% that Brian is trying to eliminate would lead us to wind up having to replace a lot more luminaires when we did alterations than we currently do. Again, there's no cost, and I don't know whether it's a large cost or not, but no cost is given, and we would request you NAR.
All All right. Anybody else wish to speak in opposition? All right. Brian, would you like a rebuttal?
Yes, Brian Holland, New Code Standards. That's not correct at all. C-503-1 exception number 7 was deleted and replaced by C-503.6 as a standalone requirement for lighting systems. We just missed it. It was an unintended error. It's not changing anything by getting rid of this. It does not exist any longer in the 2018 IECC. By carrying it over and putting it into our code, we have an exception in one part that says 50%, and we have a section that also says 10%. That's a problem. It needs to be corrected and fixed. This is the correct fix to match what the national code says. Thank you.
All right. Does the Mr. Belcher, would you like a rebuttal?
I'm sorry, briefly. Again, exception 7 talks about where you're replacing luminaires. The other section is talking about where you're adding luminaires in an alteration. And again, there is no requirement for us to meet what's in the international code as long as we can continue to demonstrate equivalency. Thank you.
All right, that concludes public comment. We come back to our TAC. Does any TAC member wish to make a motion in support of the comment? All right, no affirmative recommendation. All right, so our last one is the ENCE Chapter 5, comment number 2, submitted by Brian Holland. Brian?
Brian Holland, NEMA Codes and Standards. So I'm pretty sure there's a statutory rule that every stakeholder gets at least one approval. So I'm 0 for everything now. So I'm going to invoke that right now as my last one. This is a true change. I will definitely make that clear. I'm not trying to pull any punches here. We just read that C-503.6 that I have a completely and total different interpretation in the Home Builders Association of how Section C-503 works. But in any case, there's an equivalent requirement in the residential side. And the current equivalent requirement in the residential side is that 50% threshold. And what we're trying to do is match the C-503.6 with the R-503.1.4, and that moves that percentage to 10%. And again, that little wiggle room there for some legacy stuff, but for the most part, this is easily achievable by products that are in the marketplace. Again, I'll remind you guys, that this is in the 2021 IECC. Clearly, the Home Builders Association and Joe are not interested whatsoever in Florida being matching or equivalent to the national code. That's the one we work on as stakeholders. We work on the big national code, and then we have no expectation to have to go to all 50 states and fight all these all over again. So I apologize to everybody for my frustration, but in any case, this will, again, keep us in line with the national model that we see as being very important, while others might not. So asking you to consider this one so we're keeping efficiency as high as we possibly can when residential alterations are made. Thank you.
All right. Anybody else wish to speak in support of the comment?
Yeah, Jeff Sunny, Florida Solar Energy Center. We're in support of it as being highly cost-effective.
Okay. Anybody else? All right, does anybody wish to speak in opposition to the comment?
Joe Belcher, Florida Home Builders Association. Again, I think we addressed this one in the earlier phases and we turned it down. It's not been to the residential cost construction work group that I'm aware of. It may have been in the first go-round, but it has not been for this go-round. There's no cost assigned. And I'll be up front with you. I replaced all the lights in my house with LEDs, but that's my choice. We've got to quit mandating everybody do something through the code. We would request that you NAR this one as well.
All right.
Statutory requirements for one approval notwithstanding.
All right. Does anybody else in the public wish to speak in opposition? All right. Coming back to the proponent, Brian, would you like a rebuttal?
Sure, Brian Nima, Codes and Standards. I'll just say I agree. I don't think it's been through the residential cost workshop, but I would mention that the Residential Energy Code Development Committee at this last cycle's I-code hearings, the Group B hearings, approved this unanimously across the board, and then it received no comments for the public comment hearing. And that includes the voting block of the National Home Builders Association reps that are on the residential committee. So everybody nationally saw the logic in this, and again, my hope would be that that wouldn't, I don't understand how it would be a contentious issue. And I would just also say that if we don't have any mandatory requirements, then let's just burn the code all together and just say, do whatever you want to do because you can do it. That just doesn't work for us. We have to put mandatory provisions to move closer to better energy use and conservation. So that argument that, well, people can do it if they want to, well, of course, and we know that, but that doesn't mean that makes good code policy. So we're asking you to put in easy, low-hanging fruit provisions that probably is already being taken care of in the marketplace, as Joe indicated. It's probably already being complied with, but we might as well put it in there so there's no scapegoats. Thank you.
All right. Does the opponent, Mr. Belcher, wish a rebuttal opportunity?
Quick rebuttal. Yes, we do have a mandatory requirement. It says if you replace less than 50%, you don't have to upgrade the whole thing. Thank you.
All right. That concludes public comment. Coming back to the TAC, does any TAC member wish to make a motion in support of the comment? All right. Notwithstanding the statutory requirement for at least one approval, I'm sorry to say, Brian, that this is an NAR as well. All right, so that's the first piece of work here we have. Let's go on to our next agenda item, which is to discuss the scope of work for updating the Energy Simulation Tool Approval Technical Assistance Manual, Florida Building Code Energy Conservation 6, 2017. So for purposes of this discussion, since we have to do this periodically, the TAC should consider a couple of things. One is the scope of work for updating the manual. And a second option is whether they want to update the manual or they feel the continuation of producing the manual is of importance or not. So there's different threshold issues, whether to do it or to stop doing it or to upgrade it and review the scope of work. So those are the kind of things on the table. Mo, do you want to start us off?
Yes, this is Mo Madani. As you know, it has been the practice every time we update the Florida Building Code and with regard to the Energy Code and the approving software, we do update the TAM, which is the Technical Assistant Manual. And as you see, the Florida Solar Energy Center has put together a scope of work for updating the manual. There is, you know, just mainly to incorporate changes that is really will be part of the 2020 Florida Building Code Energy Conservation. Residential, there is some changes made to forms and some specific provisions within the code. Commercial, as you know, we are adopting the ASHRAE 90.1 2016, which also has in it a new methodology for compliance, which is it's mainly the adding an Appendix G performance rating method. Throughout the process of updating the NAP manual, we always come back and say, hey, you know, this manual is a voluntary document. It's there for a guidance to really guide the mainly vendors who would like to see that their energy software tool approved by the commission and used in the state. However, also throughout the process, we get concerns from interested group who feels that, you know, there's some concern about this document and whether it's really create unfair advantage or it's, you know, and so on. as I said, is a voluntary document and is not really something would be required. Always vendors would have the opportunity to explore other alternatives. And as you know, the way we approve softwares, we approve them based on self-affirmation or certification from the vendor. So the vendor's responsibility at that point to really provide the technical documentation that show that their software has been accredited and evaluated and tested, especially with regard to the simulation part of it, and also it shows that it meets the Florida Building Code. So as Jeff said, at this point, we have the scope of work here to update the manual. Whether we need to, how to move forward, I'll leave it to you guys.
All right, so what we need for the Energy TAC to do, I'll explain our little procedure in a moment, is to make a recommendation to the commission for their consideration. So before I take public comment, does anybody from FSAC, Jeff or Rob, wish to say anything this time? Would you like to comment?
This is Rob Vieira. This is just another update. I think Mo handled the situation well. But we've been updating it. We take all sorts of comment, as you are aware, on the Energy TAC into those. So it's really a document that guides, particularly new vendors in terms of what they're looking for and stuff. So. That's all.
Okay. So I think the question on hand for public comment first and the TAC is whether it's useful to continue updating the TAM and speak to that, and if so, there's a proposed draft scope of work that you could speak to as well. Okay. Public comment. Who would like to start off? I'll stack a list of names, and we'll go from there.
Arlene Stewart has a question.
Okay. Who else would like to speak? I'll just make a list, and we'll start with Arlene once we finish the list. All right, we'll start with you. Go ahead, Arlene.
Did I see that this is not going to be completed until December 30th?
The answer is
yes.
And the code goes into effect when?
December 31st.
Okay, so if the TAM is not going to be done until December 30th, so we're not going to have, and the TAM is not going to be done until December 30th, the software vendors won't be able to get this until December 30th, which means the vendors won't be able to get software out until after the code is due?
No, that's not true. Really,
okay.
When the vendors submit for approval, they submit for approval for compliance with the energy code, not for the TAM. The TAM is a voluntary document, it's a guidance, it doesn't really hinder anybody from coming forward and submitting their software update for approval. In fact, we encourage the vendors to submit their approval as soon as possible. The supplement to the energy code is available online and available for review. Vendors should know what changes need to be made. We are hoping that we can get approved software as early as July of this year. So there is no tie between the two. Actually, the TAM as it exists, it does provide conceptually how to go about obtaining a certification or an approval from the commission for the software. It lays out in a conceptual way what, you know, how you can self certify the software, what kind of information you need to include in the documentation that's submitted as part of the certification. So no, there is no tie between them. So that's why I think that the TAM has been and will continue to be a guidance document, and it should not be, in a way hindering anybody from moving forward as a vendor.
Just to reiterate, Mo, so if you decided to not do TAM,
may I ask a question? Vendor-
well, one second, but we're still in a moment. First of all, Tom Campbell's responding, and then
okay.
Arlene will finish her questioning, then we'll go to you next. Go ahead.
If the TAC and the commission were to choose to not do a TAM, the vendors would still be able to submit the software for improvement for a approval, and the commission and staff would be checking that software to make sure it complies with the requirements of the code. Is that correct?
That's true. I think really just to make sure too that we have a number of softwares that have been approved and validated, and really, and the only thing needed for them to get approval further is for them to update it to the update to the Energy Code 2020. So what I'm saying, I think to answer Tom's question is yes. Really, there should not be any issue there.
And Mo, wouldn't it also be true that even if the TAM wasn't updated, it's still a useful guidance document?
Yes.
You just have to make sure that you're complying with the current edition of the code.
And staff, I think as a staff, our role will be to really make sure that it's meet the requirement of the energy code. So as we have done before, we review the software for compliance with the energy code that has all the prescriptive, the baseline numbers, the components of the software satisfy the energy code, and also the software will continue to be subjected to public comments. It will be put out for anybody to run it and comment on it. So that will not change, and we'll continue doing that with the TAM or without the TAM.
Okay. Did you have any additional questions, Arlene, before I get Joe Belcher?
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Belcher, sir.
Thank you, Jeff. Just a quick question, which I'm sure I know the answer to, but would like it on the record. Has the TAM ever been used as the justification for denying a vendor software, or could it be used?
No, I have not. But I'm not. Justin can speak on that. But my experience throughout the years, we never use the TAM as a tool to stop somebody from moving forward or getting a software approved. No.
Thank you.
All right. any other public comment? Okay. Then let's come back to the TAC. The question, I think, first is a threshold question of whether you think it's reasonable or want to proceed with updating the TAM or not, and then making the recommendation based on that. Who would like to...
Jeff, this is Drew.
Yeah, Drew, would you please start us off?
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion that we suspend updating the TAM for this cycle. I think that based on the comments from Mo and... the fact that the software has no direct tie, or the approval of software has no direct tie to the TAM, and TAM is just a guideline, that I don't think we need to spend the money on updating it at this point.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's your motion. Is there a second?
Second, Grabowski.
All right, I have a motion and a second, which is to suspend the update of the TAM for the 7th edition 2020 Florida Building Code Energy Conservation. Is there any discussion on the motion?
This is Oscar. I just want to make a comment or a question.
Okay.
Regarding the format, the reports and the formats that are in the TAM, and there have been some changes to the forms or the dog testing form or whatever. Are those part of the specifications for all vendors to provide the same format, or can they change their format?
This is the report. This is Mamadani. I think that the forms that is adopted verbatim in the energy code, those would be the one to comply with, which is really, as you know, under this code changing process, we included specific forms with regard to duct leakage, with regard to the blower door test, with regard, so those form the energy performance compliance method, energy performance, those will be, you know, mandatory, you know. Otherwise, in terms of the forms too, you know, in general, as long as they have all the building components in the printout, that's really what we look for. I don't see any issue there at this point.
Okay.
So basically then, the TAM is just a guideline for software developers, and we already have one different provider that has already used it to develop. It's just an updating it to the new requirements. So I don't think, I agree that we should suspend updating it until some significant change comes about.
Okay. Any further discussion?
David Wojcik, my question is that, and I think I tend to agree that this may not be money well spent, but how many people actually use this, and who would be upset if it wasn't published again?
Okay, this is Mamadani. Based on, as you know, so far we have a list of vendors who have really got approval for their software. We have DOE, RESCheck, which normally we don't really kind of require that they follow the TAM, the federal government, so we take what they give us as free of charge. The other one is FSEC, Florida Solar Energy Center. They have commercial and residential programs, which is we're good. We have also Wright Software. They have their software already for residential, and we have the IESVE. The only one commercial program there. That's really what I see in the field at this point, and all these people that we approved, we should be able to continue updating their software to the energy code, and they already went through the certification process. I'm not aware of anybody out there at this point who would be an issue to them. And even if somebody comes, I think the TAM itself, as it exists now, it does provide for the process per se, how to go about getting an approval and what you should be looking at and so on. So I don't see it that there's going to be any issue at this point.
All right. Any additional discussion? All right, then all in favor of recommending that the Florida Building Commission suspend updating the compliance software tool systems manual and not produce an update for the 7th edition 2020 Florida Building Code Energy Conservation, say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Any opposed? It's unanimous. Very good. Then let's move on to our next and final agenda item, and this is regarding a letter of certification of equivalence to Department of Energy on our latest draft, 7th edition 2020 FTC Energy Conservation, that is equivalent to ASHRAE 90.1 2016.
Yeah, this is Mamadani again. As you know, reviewed the research project that was done by the Florida Solar Energy Center, the research project which was used to it provides for quantitative and economic analysis of the changes to the next update for the energy code. Based on the code changes that has been approved, from the 2018 International Energy Conservation Code, or whether from Florida specific through the triennial. Based on the analysis and everything, The report is mainly provide for a ground for the equivalency, and based on that, we have written a draft letter to go to the commission, which mainly certify that to the to DOE. By the way, this certification is due by February 27. The certification mainly states that the commercial building provision of the proposed 7 edition 2020 Florida Building Code Energy Conservation will meet the 2016 edition of the Energy Standard for Building, which is really ASHRAE 90.1. So if you agree, we'd like you to provide your acceptance at this point. Go ahead.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mo. Is there any public comment before we go to the TAC? All right. So what we'd be looking for is that the TAC would recommend that the Florida Building Commission send a letter of certification of equivalence to the Department of Energy certifying the equivalence of the latest draft of the 7th edition 2020 Florida Building Code Energy Conservation's commercial building provisions to ASHRAE 90.1-2016. Anybody wish to make a motion?
Right, I make the motion.
All right. Is there a second?
Aye, sir, second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion?
Aye, sir.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 It's unanimous. Very good. Is there any additional...
Yep.
Is there any additional comment from anybody wishing to make any comments from either the public or the TAC? All right, I'm going to go ahead and do the second roll call. Commissioner Smith. Drew?
Present.
Commissioner Smith Burke. Kelly?
I'm here.
Commissioner Kaya?
Still here.
Jan Geislers?
Here.
Tim Grabowski?
Here.
Jonathan Parks? Jonathan? Scott Rank?
Here.
David Wozniak.
Here.
All right. Jonathan, are you still there? All right. Well, we have seven. We retained a quorum, so we're good. Mr. Chairman, would you adjourn us, please?
Yes. Thank you, Jeff, for leading us today. Fine job. Thank you, everyone, for their time. Motion to adjourn, please.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Chair asked for a motion. Is there a motion? Drew, one
motion.
All right, we have a second.
Aye, sir.
All right.
All in favor say aye.
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 Thank you all. Bye.
Great job, guys.
All right, bye, everybody.
See you on Monday, Mel.
We'll see you guys. Yeah, have a nice weekend. I'm going to go see the grandchild. Have fun.
All right, so we...